Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm thrilled to introduce you to Sarah Hamilton from Hamilton Studio, a private voice studio in Harrisonburg. She's a graduate of Messiah College with a BA in performance and a graduate of the Shenandoah Conservatory with a master's of music in voice. She's a member of the National Association Teachers of Singing, the Speakeasy Cooperative, and a board member of the Shenandoah Valley Children's Choir. Whether you're learning to match pitch, preparing for an upcoming gig, musical, audition, trying to join the worship team, the church choir, or have always just wanted to sing but believe or were told you couldn't, then Hamilton Studio is a place for you. I'm delighted to share her amazing self with you laughers. Welcome to the show, Sarah. It's so great to have you on today.
I'm excited to be here, Dawn.
Yes, this is great. I can't wait to have the laughers hear your story, what you offer, and just how your experience has been since you opened up your studio here locally. So let's start with this, Sarah. Did you grow up here in the Shenandoah Valley, and when did you fall in love with singing?
I did. My family actually moved here when I was 9 months old, and I've kind of just been here ever since. I'm a true townie. I'm very much of the Shenandoah Valley. I can't pinpoint one moment, I think, when I fell in love with singing. You know, I grew up in the Mennonite Church, and in the Mennonite Church that I was a part of, four-part harmony was natural. Like, that's what we did during worship services. And so I kind of just grew up hearing beautiful harmonies and took it for granted, you know, like it was just this natural thing that I thought everybody could do and everybody could be a part of. And that was one place where I really just fell in love with singing and voices and what they could do when they were combined together. And then I myself actually joined the Shenandoah Valley Children's Choir, which I begged to be a part of for a very long time because my brother was a part of it. And I was just like so determined to be a part of it and be one of those really cool singers up on stage. And I finally joined when I was in second grade. And for me, that was the other big thing, is just kind of singing with other people and seeing what voices could do and what they could create together was really inspiring to me. And I don't know, I think it was just a combination of those things that it just kind of became a part of my identity from a very young age.
Yeah, and you went on to Harrisonburg High School, I believe, and did some performances there. Can you speak on that a little bit for us?
I did. Well, that was an interesting time, too. So I actually did. I stopped doing the Shenandoah Valley Children's Choir in middle school because I decided that sports were more important in my life. And that was where I was going to go with my life. And so I did do the musical my freshman year of high school. And then I joined the school choir in my sophomore year. So I was a part of that, and I didn't do any musical productions actually my sophomore or junior year, but I came back my senior year, and that was kind of a big moment for me because I started taking voice lessons when I was a sophomore. That was when I was told I was allowed to take voice lessons, and I started to get back into that, but it was such a secret. Like, for me, I was the athlete, you know, I was out on the volleyball court, I was out in the track field, and that's what I did. And so nobody actually really knew that voice was my thing. Nobody knew that singing was my thing. I kind of kept it to myself at that time. So yeah, I was in Godspell my freshman year, and that was fun. It was a very new experience for me because I'd never been in theater before. And then it was really, for me, my senior year when Beauty and the Beast happened, when I got cast as the wardrobe. So I got to like tap into these like classical chops a little bit. And it was really fun. And that was the first moment that people knew I could sing. And that moment for me was really special because I remember being in that rehearsal room when we were practicing a song where I had to sing up to a high G, which, you know, to me and my voice teacher was like, whatever, it's a G, it's fine, I have to do these regularly. But there in that group, it was like this big moment, and there was like I had a little selfish moment of like where everybody just stopped and was like, what? We didn't know that you could do that. And I had to leave the room later to get some water, and my friend came to me. She was like, everybody was talking about you. Everybody said, where did that come from? And for me, that was such like affirmation of, oh, okay, I actually am good at this stuff. I can do this stuff. And it was kind of like my big moment of like, hey, this is actually who I am, and this is what's important to me. So I kind of feel like that show was a big deal to me because I got to finally step into myself as a singer and kind of say, this is who I am. And it was important.
Is that what prompted you to choose to study voice in college then? Is this experience? Because you were in athletics also. So how did you come to decide, well, when I go to college, I'm going to study voice?
You know, I don't. No, that was actually a hard choice for me, because even when I was visiting colleges, you know, my junior year, I was still trying to decide, do I want to do kinesiology or do I want to do voice related things? And of course, I had to decide early enough to audition. And it was more the work that I did with my voice teacher, Jill Cockburn. She really set the foundation for that. She's really the one that I owe so much to, because she, along with Julia White, set the foundation for my music skills and my fundamentals. And so it was kind of just like this undercurrent, I guess, that I had. So I don't know what made that final decision. I think what I've discovered in hindsight is that I just like technique. I like how things work and how they come together and learning those different pieces. And so really, the careers I was looking into kind of did the same thing. You know, one just did it for the voice, one did it for the whole physical body. And I think just the musicality and the joy I got when singing was just more. It was bigger. It was more important. It was more of my identity than sports was. Sports was something that I did and was good at, but singing and music was who I was. And I think it just kind of took me some time playing with, you know, doing the stuff I did with my voice teacher, putting together recitals. And then finally, I think that moment in senior year was kind of like a affirmation of like, yes, this is right. This is the right fit. So I don't think it was what inspired that change, but it definitely confirmed that decision for me.
Yeah, I'm really excited that we're getting into this, because I have some questions I'm going to ask based on what you just said after this next question. So you went to Messiah College for your BA in performance, where you were a member of the choir, performed in multiple opera scenes, and performed as an alto soloist. Where is Messiah College, and what were typical days like for you as a voice student there?
Yes, Messiah College is in Pennsylvania. I always say to people, it's really close to Harrisburg. And if that's confusing, I say it's really close to Hershey, because people usually, it's like about 30 minutes out from those places. But it's in, it's in a tiny little town in the middle of nowhere, PA. And I think when I was there, it was a school of 3,500 students. So it was small. And that was the appeal to me. Small. I, you know, growing up around JMU, it was too big. It was too much. I wanted somewhere where I would have relationships with professors. And so that's why I chose there. And man, was it an awakening of what college looked like. You know, you think about, you're in high school, you're like, I'm going to go study music, and it sounds magical and beautiful. And the amount of work is absurd. You know, I would be like hanging out with my friends who were biology majors, which biology is hard. You know, biology is no joke. But I would be jealous because they would only have 4 classes. And for me, I had 12 a semester, usually. Some of them were 0 credits because you had to fit them in, but you had to go. But you still had to attend in order to graduate. And so my freshman year was hard. It took me a while to settle in because you had so many things going on. You had to be in ensembles. You had to be part of like our voice class, which was all of the voice majors getting together and singing songs for each other and critiquing each other. You had to be part of the theory class and the sight singing class and just so many different parts of it, as well as all the gen eds. And so scheduling was a nightmare. That was when I kind of got obsessive about my schedule and had to sit down and write out like minute by minute, hour by hour, what my week looked like and what 30-minute sector I could have to go and get lunch. and then come back. Cause usually like I didn't have time to eat and it took me a while to figure out like, okay, I need to eat. So I need to schedule it in. I can't just be like, oh, I'm hungry. I'm going to go grab something. There wasn't time. So it was quite an awakening in the sense that it is so much more challenging than you think it's going to be. Cause music just sounds so nice and like fun and happy, but it's hard work. And I think they put that hard work in freshman year to challenge you to make sure you want to be there. But the scheduling was hard. The transition was hard. But once I got the hang of it, I kind of got used to it. And I think it makes sense for that schedule because that's kind of how my schedule is now. You know, I still have to schedule things out, you know, hour by hour because we're wearing many hats as musicians. And so they prepare you for that. That's for sure. They throw you right into it when you get there.
Yeah, I can see that. And I can see how beneficial it's been to you in running your studio. I also like what you were talking about earlier in terms of how much you are passionate about the technique and how the body is used in singing. And I think it's really interesting that you have a background in high school athletics. And I'm wondering if how you feel that impacted your development as a singer and your career.
So much actually, because I was a soccer player first and foremost. I loved soccer. I wanted to be the next Mia Hamm. And then I went on to do track, and then I went on to do volleyball, and it was just so much of my life. But singing and sports really have so much in common, which people don't think about it that way, but they really do. We're really just coordinating muscles to do a certain task. And so I'd already been trained in that and looking at the body in different perspectives, because the way you use your body in volleyball is not the same way you use it in soccer. It's not the same way you use it in basketball. And singing is so similar in the way that we do different genres. Like singing classical is not the same as singing music theater. It's not the same as singing pop or rock or whatever you're interested in singing. And so I had to learn to adapt early to like different ways to use the body efficiently. And it just so plays a role in how singing works. Because again, it's not magical. It really is just a coordination of muscles. And we just have to find what's in the right place, what's not in the right place, and do some drills and exercises to work through it. And so I think it's huge. And part of the intake I like to ask actually is what sports my students have been involved in, because it's so easy to tie into like, oh, okay, well, you know how your body feels when you're dribbling the ball. Okay, think about how we can use that. And so I love to tap into that, because those are automatic for a lot of people, and they don't realize that singing is physically active. You know, you've got to use your core. You've got to keep your body in a certain position and relaxed in a certain way. And so I think the adaptability of playing multiple sports and seeing the body as adaptable was really helpful for me in seeing the voice from this perspective as well.
That is really incredible. I know I had taken some voice lessons from you, and you know, I'm amateur hour over here with the voice. And you know, I really did just say, okay, this is all the vocal cords. And I remember you kind of like, this is the breath. And I've heard other singers talk about how important that is. And I think that's so valuable that you can take some of your own personal experiences, not all of us can play pro sports, but a lot of us have done some recreational sports or, you know, that kind of thing. And we can take those skills and transfer them to really capitalize on what our voices can have the ability to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's exciting to me. Now, I have some idea, Sarah, what an alto is, but your but your website, you know, amateur hour, back to that on the voice. Your website describes you as a mezzo soprano. Can you help educate the laughers on the different voice types there are and how one finds out what type they are?
Yes. There are so many terms. There are so many. So it's a big pool to dip into. So I'll try and do like cursory, really basic.
Okay, go. So
if you want to just kind of break it down into just four parts. Yes, there's deeper than this. If you want to dive deeper into it, have fun Googling this because there's so much, so much beyond it. But the four like main ones would be your soprano, your mezzo soprano, your tenor, and your either your baritone, your bass, your baritenor. That's why I say it gets kind of messy. So we'll just say bass, bass, okay. Tenor, mezzo soprano, alto. So your sopranos are your higher voices. Your mezzo sopranos are typically your lower voices like mine. I mean, you can, when I speak, it's a little bit lower. I don't talk up here like a lot of sopranos do. So that's kind of one way that you can tell, like, where does your voice sit when you speak? That kind of starts to tell you where your voice sits. Tenors are the, like the higher singing men. And then basses are, you know, the basses, right? They walk in a room, those men, and they're like, hello. And you can just hear their presence. Those are the four main voice types. They are mostly helpful when it comes to classical singing. So I call myself a mezzo soprano because I was first and foremost a classical singer, and that's a classical singer kind of term to use. It literally means half soprano, so it's not like the nicest term. It always feels like, what do you mean half soprano? But I can sing the low notes, so I guess that's good. But it's really only, in my opinion, really only helpful when it comes to classical singing, where that fits. I think what's so much more important is what your range is, especially if you're interested in doing more contemporary music like pop and music theater. Your range and where that sits matters so much more than giving yourself a title and or a name of kind of what voice part you are, especially if you are a young singer. Like, don't even worry about that because it's going to change so many times before you're 30. You know, you might start off as a soprano when you're younger and then you kind of shift into a mezzo soprano territory. So really what matters is where your voice sits in that range. And what you can do is just kind of like just sit at a piano and see like, what's the lowest note that I can sing? And then just kind of like walk up the scale and see what the highest note that you can sing. And there are actually some charts out there that if you really, really want the term, you can kind of look up and see, okay, if I'm between this range, I'm most likely in this category of a bass if I'm a low male singer, or if I'm a male and I can, you know, sing up to a C5, which is a C above middle C, you're probably a tenor. You know, mezzo sopranos were not that much higher than tenors, and then sopranos are the ones that are like singing way in the stratosphere. But again, I think it's if you're not interested in classical singing, those terms don't really matter. It really comes down to how high can you sing, how low can you sing, and then making all the songs fit your voice, not the other way around.
Okay. All right. That's great. You've done a lot of opera yourself. So it sounds like you might be offering more kinds of singing lessons to people that expand beyond opera. Is that correct?
Yes. In fact, I very rarely get to do opera. So if anybody is interested, I'd be happy to take you. I actually mostly do music theater these days. I don't know how that happened. I think in my grad school and my pedagogy degree, we did a lot of training in more contemporary styles and, you know, how to belt and how to use this different part of your voice, how to sing like a pop star, how to sing like a rock star. And that's mostly what I do now, actually. I don't do a lot of classical, which is actually fine with me because I love music theater and I love pop music and I love all the different styles, but I love classical too. So while my roots are in classical, it's actually a very small percentage of what I do now. And I'm mostly, music theater has kind of become my bread and butter somehow. And, you know, the pop songs and the gigging musicians have kind of become the next step. So yeah, basically anything but rap, I work with. I'm not the one you want to come to for that. Go to somebody much cooler than me. But any of those genres, you know, where you just want to learn how to use your voice. Again, it's kind of like, I heard a term from somebody I admire, Shannon Coates. She's in my speakeasy cooperative, and she called it, you know, the GP of being a voice teacher. She used that in one of her lives recently, and I love that term, and I'm trying to think of how I can capture that, because that's what I feel like. I'm kind of like your general practitioner, right? So, like, anything wide-range voice-related, I'm here for it. Like, let's talk about how the voice works and how to, like, make it fit into the space that you want to go to. And then we can kind of get down to the nitty-gritty after that, but it's, yeah, I like playing with all the different stuff. It keeps my day interesting.
Yeah, that's great. What, by the way, what is the Speakeasy Cooperative? I meant to ask that. Yeah. Yes. I'm like, what is this? I need to ask her about this.
Oh my goodness. It is. Oh, I'm such small potatoes in this group because I'm such a, like a lurker, but it's a group of voice teachers. I wouldn't say cross country, but it's actually like basically all over the world. And they're basically just independent voice teacher owners like me. And so we have a Facebook group, we've got a Slack channel, and it's kind of put together by Michelle Marquardt DeVoe, who is amazing and has taught me so much. She's kind of the Sherpa, I guess, of the group. But she kind of put this group together, and it's just a bunch of colleagues trying to do the same thing. And we go to each other for help, and we get webinars and get to be a part of this. And so I get to learn from people way smarter than me every day when they're posting about the cool things that they're doing. And honestly, so much of how I run my studio is based on some of these cool things that I've seen these colleagues do. So it's basically just a co-working group, I guess, if I could simplify it to someone who's not in the voice world. It's just a place where I can go to ask my questions. Other people ask questions. We're talking pedagogy, we're talking business, we're talking everything when it comes to running a voice studio and how to do it like a boss.
I love it. It's love great. It.
Again, yeah. I'm small potatoes, but these people are incredible, and I've learned so much from them.
It's an incredible supportive community to help you all thrive and to help, others find their voices and amplify them, basically. So that's really great. Speaking of which, your website mentions that you believe there is no such thing as a person who cannot sing. If you can speak, you can sing. How did you develop this belief?
I don't know. I think it's somewhere in my training. I would probably attribute a lot of that to Shenandoah Conservatory, because I learned so much about what true tone deafness is and the fact that it's incredibly rare. So a lot of people feel like because they can't hold a tune, they're like, oh, I can't sing. I can't, pick out that pitch and sing along with that. Yet at the same time, they're using this wonderful inflection with their voice and have pitch with their voice. And so it's funny to me and to a lot of us, because if you are speaking and you have more than one pitch when you're speaking, you are capable of singing. You just haven't learned how to harness that and use it purposefully. So I think it's if you're truly tone deaf, you're probably going to have like a more monotone voice and like not have any inflection. But when you're paying attention and you're like engaged and your voice is moving, you've got more than one pitch. Of course you can do that. We hear that you can do that. Now we just have to make sure that the brain and the ear and the voice start to talk to each other and match up. And that's actually, I have a few students that I'm working with matching pitch, and I've had a couple in the past, and it's so much fun to see like going from believing that like, oh, I can't match any pitch, I'm tone deaf, to, but you just sang that melody all on your own. And it's just really fun to watch. So I don't know what created that. I think it's just in a lot of my training and probably many of the courses and just hearing that mantra over and over at Shenandoah, but it's true. I have yet to find someone that can't harness that and really learn how to match that pitch and sing along. And a lot of people feel insecure about that. And that's sad. No one should feel insecure about that. Singing should be universal. Everyone should feel like they can open their mouths and sing and have a good time. And so I think it's important to know that to be truly tone deaf is incredibly rare.
Okay. I'm going to, again, amateur hour 101 over here. You're talking about matching pitch. And honestly, that is foreign to me in terms of what you mean by that. I'm wondering if you can expand on that more. I think people in the voice world know exactly what you mean when I'm going to help you match pitch. But those of us who are outside the voice world, we don't know what that means exactly.
Yeah. I think about... That's a really good question. And, it's everyone who I've worked with who I'm working on this particular topic. Some people don't even realize that they're not matching pitch. And of course, that makes sense. But it's all about like if I were to sing this note and go, can you do that same exact sound, that same exact pitch?
OK.
And so sometimes I'll try and like if I pick a note on the piano like that one and go, I like to see if you hear that pitch on the piano, can you match it? Or can you match it when I sing? And a lot of new singers can't match a pitch from another instrument because it's a completely different sound and it just doesn't make any sense. So when I say matching pitch, it's kind of like, yeah, if I'm just singing that one pitch, can you repeat that? And then if I go higher, can you do that one too? So it's about kind of using the ear to hear what I'm singing and then imitate it at that same place. Does that make sense?
Yes, that helps a lot. I'm also curious, do the other voice singers you spoke of in the Speakeasy Cooperative, do they share this belief about there's no such thing as a person who cannot sing? If you can speak, you can sing. Do you all talk about that in your forums at all?
We do. And I mean, I can't speak for everybody in the group because I think it's over 100 or 200 in this group at this point. But for the most part, yeah, we definitely talk about that. And that's actually one of the reasons why I'm a part of this group, is because they are the most inclusive, like everybody can be a part of this. How do we help people? How do we create language that everybody can understand this? So it's definitely a movement. I think we, without going too deep into it, there is a slightly elitist history behind classical singing. And well, if you can't meet the standard, then you're out. Why are you here? And I'm drawn to this group because they kind of hold that same belief with me, is that's not true. You know, it's not, we shouldn't cut it off to people. We shouldn't cut people off from singing when they love it just because they don't meet some bar that you set. So yeah, this group definitely, I would say, I can't speak for everybody, but I would say that's one of the reasons that I was drawn to them, is because of that kind of similar philosophy and open-mindedness and inclusivity to include all people.
I think this is beautiful, because something that's coming to mind to me right now is I love to go to places like Monticello or, different era and period of time in our early history of America, and George Washington's place, or that place in Stanton. I'm trying to remember what president's home was there. But anyway, when you go in these earlier American homes, they have like this room that was dedicated to people coming together and singing. It is a very normal, everyday part of our culture. Early on, and I imagine for years before that. So it was more of an inclusive environment. So this is what we do. This is how we entertain each other. This is how we spend time and connect. And I think that's what's beautiful about what you guys are doing, is kind of bringing us back to our roots in a way.
Yeah, I like that way of thinking about it. I think there's so many times when music has been restricted from some people, in so many ways. I mean, it can be a fraught history if you really look back at it. But I think which is sad, because I do think that music does bring us together and does, we bond over our similar tastes in musicians, and if we can just kind of, get over ourselves, don't take ourselves so seriously sometimes, and just like get together and make music together. Who says it has to be perfect? I mean, if it brings you together and you're having fun, and I think that's so important.
Yeah, more about the connection. And if it's off pitch, it can be funny.
It can be, right? I know. I mean, I can't say that I haven't like sung off pitch for fun. Every now and then, it's just fun to like mix up what you're doing. You're singing a song and see if you can just sing it off pitch, or if I can sing a pop song like an opera singer, or sing opera song like I'm a pop singer. It's fun to play, and you need to be able to play to improve. Like if you want to sing, you've got to play with your voice. If you're kind of in this rigid of like I have to sound like this, you're not going to improve, because we've got to make weird noises to figure out what the voice can do, and you've got to laugh at yourself, because you're going to make terrible sounds. It's going to happen. If you're not willing to go there, I can't, there's only so much we can do. So we just kind of have to laugh at ourselves when we sing and when we make noise. And of course, I mean, that's all it is. We're making different kinds of noise that we have attributed a value to. So just have fun with it.
I agree. And you can have fun with that with a group of people. It's like, do a song that's out of pitch for someone and be like, Dawn, this one isn't for you.
Maybe not.
I know. You can pick up on the next one. Round of drinks for everyone.
Nobody will know.
That's great. What is your goal when you are working with students?
That depends on the student. So it would be very different goals that I have for my middle schoolers that walk in, where I just kind of want to introduce them to the voice, different types of singing, how that you can use their voice, how to let their voice be silly and make mistakes. My adult singers can be different. You know, if someone comes in and they're like, I really, you know, I want to go into music theater and this is what I want to work on, we'll work on those particular skills. I think so. It really just depends on my goals or what the students' goals are. You know, like what do you want to learn? What do you want to discover about your voice? And we will open up that world a little bit more for you. So I don't really have an agenda when someone walks in the door. I kind of want to know what your perceptions are of your voice and of singing, what you want out of your voice and singing, and then how can I start to open that door for you and show you all of the options available to you? I think that's a really important question for me, is what do you want to learn? Because I was never asked that question. And I was too afraid to ask. I was a very timid, I'm still am, but I was still a very timid kid and afraid to break any rules and afraid to cross any lines. And so it's become very important to me to ask that question of, to all of them, regardless of age, what do you want to learn? What do you want to accomplish? And while I'll kind of like open up the door a little bit more each time to say like, okay, well, there's also this, there's this, I like to start there. My goal is to help you achieve your goals. And that's kind of my end game.
I like that. Yeah, you've been open for a little bit. You opened in 2014. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering, how did your lesson offerings change over the pandemic? And what did all that look like for you?
Oh, boy. I mean, like everybody else, it was a challenge. Singing online is an experience. But I did. I took everybody online when everybody else did. And it was a tough decision. Luckily, I love technology. So I got to buy equipment and I got to buy microphones and I got to buy like ring lights. And so that was fun. But I took everybody online for that. Everybody that I had, I had to like set up some processes of how to get on, how to make sure that Zoom had the best possible option. As far as how I do lessons, that didn't change too much, actually. I had to be a lot more patient because I couldn't plunk out notes with people because of the lag. So we did a lot of like call and response. I would sing part of the melody, the kids would sing the melody back, and work on it in that way. And I had to let go of some control, which is probably good for me. I really had to let the singers take more ownership of how the lesson ran. And I think that was beneficial. I think kind of, you know, I've noticed an improvement in ear, actually, because I had to have people sing a cappella or without a track or without me playing the piano to learn melodies and sing through it. And I'm amazed now at how many of my singers can do that, which that's not actually easy for a lot of people to like stay in tune without help. So that was helpful, but it was an adventure. It was, I think I learned quickly that, you know, because I'm extroverted, I need people to get some energy back. And Zoom does not give that to you in the same way. So it was exhausting in a very different way. But it was nice that I could keep it going, and really nothing changed, just the platform. So I feel pretty fortunate. I didn't have to close down. I didn't have to do much other than just, hey, we're on Zoom now. Here's how you're going to set up and here's what you're going to do. So I do feel fortunate in that, and that I actually like technology and working with that. But it was an adventure. But yeah, nothing really, as far as how I run things, nothing really changed. And so it was actually pretty seamless taking people back in person. And it's kind of just normal now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, speaking of the lessons, what options do you have available, and are you continuing to offer virtual ones?
I am. Yes. Actually, I was planning on adding that feature before the pandemic hit. Like a few months, I was like, maybe I should offer online lessons, which is hilarious because, you know, then we all did. But yeah, so I usually take students on a semester basis. So you sign up for either a summer, fall, or spring session. And at this point, people kind of choose whether they want to be online or in person, which is fun because I've had some students. I work with one student now down in South Carolina. I had another one that was out in New Jersey. So I've been able to kind of get out of state a little bit, which has been really fun. I'm continuing to offer virtual and in person. I love in person, but you know what? That kind of the virtual, now that I get to do both, is a much more rewarding combo. And yeah.
Yeah. Do you customize? Can you offer some customization if they're like, oh, I don't know if I want to do a whole semester. I just want to do 6 weeks or whatever. Are you able to do that with them?
I do an a la carte option, which basically means like pick and choose what you want. So first you kind of have to be like on the roster. So basically you have to do an initial fit session, which I do with everybody just to make sure, like, am I really the right person to fit your goals? And is this really going to be a mutually beneficial relationship for this? And that's not always the case. Cause I'm fallible. I'm a person. So I don't have all the answers for every singer. And so that meeting is really important for me to determine, like, am I really the right one? And if not, let's find you someone who would be a better fit for what you want to accomplish. So that's what that first session does. And then after that, we decide, okay, I'm gung-ho. I want to be invested in this. I want to come weekly for the whole session. And so that's what people sign up for. If you don't want to do that, that's when the a la carte comes into play. So if we say, yeah, you're a great fit for the studio, but you either don't have the funds or the time, because a lot of people don't, right? We're overcommitted people. To commit to it, then a la carte just means you just schedule whenever you see fit. Whenever there's a spot in the schedule and you know you can do something that day, you just schedule a session and we'll work through your stuff that day. So that's my option for those that have too much of a burden for time or money, or just want to check in every so often. They don't feel like they need the weekly. They just kind of want to check in with their voice and what's going on. So that's the other option that I offer for those that don't really want to commit to a full semester.
Okay. So let's just say that, you know, I'm Johnny or Sue and I see Hamilton. I've listened to this podcast and I'm like, wow, that sounds really cool. I want to sign up for a fit session and see if this is a fit for me. Can you just kind of walk through what that experience would be like, how long it is, how much it costs? Just paint us a picture.
Yeah, of course. And right now it's tricky because I actually have a wait list right now. So the first step is to get on that wait list so I know that you're interested. And I'm kind of revamping that process right now because I went from having no wait list over the pandemic to 17 people on a wait list in a matter of months. So that's still to be worked out. but once you get on that wait list, I've got your information. That's kind of an intake where I kind of start to figure out what your goals are, where you fit, age-wise, genre interest wise. So we start to look at that. And then I send out a message to those people and say, hey, there's a spot open. You know, why don't you go ahead and schedule initial fit? And so in the initial fit session, it's 45 minutes for $45, just to keep it easy to remember. And in that time, we just really sit down and chat first because most people are terrified to come and sing for somebody, especially someone who's, you know, quote unquote, a professional singer. So it can be intimidating for a lot of people. So we just sit and chat for a little bit. I get to know a little bit more about the goals, a little bit more about you, what you want to do. We just get to know each other so that they can realize that I'm not scary at all. I'm pretty chill. I kind of get those nerves out a little bit, just get some conversation going. And then after that, then we run through some exercises. I like them to bring a song if they can to sing for me so I can see how their voice works. And of course, I know that people are nervous and people always want to tell me that. And I'm like, I can hear it. I know the difference between nervousness and technique, and it's totally fine. I expect you to be nervous. If you're not, then you're a magical unicorn. But a lot of people are nervous coming in. And so then we'll sing through songs and exercises. And it's there at the end of that we kind of determine a little bit more about, okay, well, here's your range. You know, this is the range that you're working within. And then, you know, here's some recommendations on this is what I would start playing with your voice first. So maybe you need to work on breath first, and we really need to spend some time on that. Maybe we need to just start with all the fundamentals and build a better foundation. But I kind of give advice based on what I hear and say, okay, this is where we would start with your voice. And then we kind of talk about what options are best. Is this the right fit, or should we find another teacher? Are you a really good candidate for doing the semester packages and just doing the monthly or the week to week and monthly payments? Or do you better fit a la carte and just want to check in every so often and say, maybe this isn't, you're not quite sure if you're interested or not. You don't want to fully commit, or you don't have the time. And so we kind of use that time to make those decisions. And then after that, that's kind of when we engage in that next step.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I'm curious also, given your experience doing this, having your studio since 2014, you've taught a lot of students. Yes. And so I'm sure you could share a lot of experiences about this, but I would love to hear a few of your most rewarding and memorable experiences so far as a voice teacher.
Oh, man. There are numerous, because it's at this point, it's in the hundreds. And every experience is so different. So I will say, I still get so much joy out of, you know, we kind of bring it back to matching pitch. When I have students that came in unable to match a pitch that I'm singing to being able to sing a whole phrase on their own, those moments, I've had them several times, and they're probably the most excited I get. When someone is able to like sing a whole song or sing a passage and I didn't help them at all. Those are, for me, the most rewarding, because it's literally giving somebody a voice. It's literally giving somebody confidence to know that they can do that. And that is one area when I work with those clients that I get so much from. You know, it seems so small to those who are professional singers, but to those who haven't had the chance to sing and explore, it's huge. It's huge to be able to do that. So those are some really rewarding moments. And then I'll have to say, going to my singer's productions, the music theater productions, is always a lot of fun. And I kind of get like a, you know, like a warm heart. Like, I mean, I care about them. They mean so much to me. And so getting to see them on stage and singing and like take pictures with them afterwards, I feel like a proud little mother hen. Like I just, you know, and it's, I do remember, I know I had a huge, I mean, right when the pandemic hit, I had a huge cohort of seniors who were really kind of essential in getting my studio up and running. And so it was really hard to sit, you know, to see this group leave. But luckily I got to see their shows, because theirs were in February. So before everything shut down. And I just remember taking a photo. Excuse me. I remember taking a photo at Harrisonburg High School for the musical. I think it was a Hairspray that year. And like I had gathered around everybody that I'd worked with that was in that production. It was like 14 of the singers. And I just remember being like, oh, this is so cool that I get to do this, that like I've been able to get to know every single one of these singers in this production. And it was just like this huge photo shoot. And that was a really special moment to me, because I just felt honored that they would trust me and come to me and work with me. And then of course want to take a photo with me. Like that was nice too. You know? So moments like that where I get to see them in the real world and see the work that we do in here, which can sometimes be boring and can sometimes be hard to put it out there in the world and see them succeed at it and see them smile over the work that they did. And that those moments for me are huge. So they're definitely my favorite moments, which is why I try to get a picture with every single one of my kids after the show. Even if I don't post them, I just like, I want it to remember it. And that's why, I mean, I have all of the programs of the shows I've been to with my kids on it on my wall, so I can see that and remember that every day. And now I look back to like the shows from 2014 and, you know, all of those different productions. So it's, those are the moments for me that make it worthwhile and feel the most rewarding.
Beautiful. Love, love, love. Well, if the laughers want to see you perform live in the community, is there a place that they can do that anywhere?
Usually. Usually. The one performance I do here is at the Messiah Sing. So it's the Mennonite churches in the area put together a sing-along of the Christmas portion of Handel's Messiah. And I'm one of the soloists for that usually. And that was always a big event because professional musicians or anyone who's been in the singing world knows that just singing through Handel's Messiah is not a small undertaking. So it's fun. You don't have to be perfect. It's not perfect, but it's a really fun event where we get to come together and just kind of sing through that portion of a really big oratorio. So I'm usually the alto soloist for that. But we haven't done it in a couple of years, of course, because of the pandemic. So I'm hoping, maybe if a couple of them hear this podcast, that we'll be doing it again this year and can put that back on. That's been the main thing that I've been involved in.
Oh, yeah. I'm hoping so, too, because I will come. By the way, what's an oratorio?
Oh, my goodness. An oratorio. It's basically a large choral work.
Okay.
So it's wow, how do I break this down?
Yeah,
it's a weird thing, the singing world. But yeah, it's basically like a big choral piece, like a book of choir pieces. And there are usually, up to four soloists in different voice parts. And so the soloists will have their own song or a little solo. It's sometimes alone and then sometimes with the choir. So it's a nice way that we sometimes refer to it as park and bark. So we just stand there and sing. So there's no acting. There's nothing. We just here's my voice. But it's fun. It's intense. It can be really hard stuff, but it's basically a choral song with lots of solos.
That's helpful. So when we get to see you again, we kind of know a little bit about what to expect. So thanks for sharing that. That's great. There are recordings on your website of your students and yourself performing that we can listen to. Can you tell us a little bit more about those recordings and what the laughers might hear when they visit your site?
Sure. So it's kind of a random compilation right now with more to come. But right now I have a couple recordings of my young artist performers, meaning I have different categories of whether you're an adult singer or you're a young artist performer. And every semester, my young artist performers, meaning sixth grade through 12th grade, will do a concert, either a coffee house or a spotlight. And so I take those and record those concerts, then afterwards put them up on the website for people to go back and watch. So those have been online the last few years. And then before, we would do those events in person. So there are some recordings of that just to see what the different singers are up to, the different variety. I've got quite an array of different genres. So you can go and listen to those. I also have some recordings that adult singers have done over the years, which, again, I have so many more to add. But some of them are from my first singers that I worked with and others that just, they were working on a song and I recorded what they came up with and how they finished that song. And then my recordings are kind of a smattering of different experiences. So I've got some clips from, I think it might have been my grad school audition for one of them, I think, actually. So I have a clip from that and then duets and different clips from recitals that I did in college. And then I do have one Sarah Bareilles cover, I think, on there where, I was trained as a classical musician. I was trained as a mezzo-soprano. I was trained to sing opera and oratorio, but I love pop music, but I was never trained in it. So all of it has been in the pedagogy that I have learned around that singing, and then every now and then trying to employ it myself, which is a little harder to self-teach, but that was kind of my first attempt at really working on a pop song and trying to make that part of my practice and getting used to that. So I actually have a clip on there of really my first ever worked on pop song that I just decided to go through the whole process and record and put out there because, if I tell my students to be brave and do it and then I don't do it, what kind of message does that send? So that's what that recording is. And it's, and I get embarrassed of it sometimes, but at the same time, I'm like, no, it's, it's my process. We're all learning, including myself. So it's kind of just a combination of different things that I've worked on over the years and that my students have worked on.
Ah, that's great. What would you say, or do you know, or can you share, what is the oldest student you've worked with?
Age-wise?
Yes.
I want to say 70s.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So you can't be too old to take voice lessons. I think that's the thing that I love is I get a lot of adult singers and I think that we always feel like we have to stop as we get older, but it's like, if you want to do it, no, let's do it.
Do it. Never too late.
Never too late.
Never too late. I love that very much. You know, it's my own personal story. It's just never too late to chase something that you're interested or passionate about and give it a whirl, because on the other side of fear, adventure awaits.
That's right. We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun.
You are a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
So as we wrap up here, can you share with the Laffers how they can follow Hamilton Voice Studio on social media or otherwise to get more information?
Absolutely. So I have an Instagram account. It's Hamilton Voice Studio. And actually my Facebook account is the same one. So usually right now I'm kind of at a place where most of that is upcoming events. So if you want to stay up to date on what some of my singers are doing and what events are coming up, you'll see those posts either on the Facebook page or the Instagram page.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And Laffers will put that information for you in the show notes as well. And thank you so much, Sarah. It's been so great spending time with you today, talking about all things singing and Hamilton Voice Studio. You are delightful. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you. This was a blast.
Yes, it totally was. And Laffers, you can get more information about Hamilton Voice Studio by visiting their website at hamiltonvoice.com. That's hamiltonvoice.com. We'll also, again, be sure to put this information for you in the show notes as well, so you can check out all her lesson options, packages, and listen to recordings of her as well as her students' performances. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, Laffers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.